Move on to agenda item 12, sitting as the Marin County Flood Control and Water Conservation District Board. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you very much. Good morning, President Sackett and supervisors. My name is Chris Blunk. I'm the Interim Public Works Director, and I'll be giving a presentation this morning about the Flood Zone 9 drainage fee and annual report. And
before we get to that, let's go to item 13A, which is the Board of Directors Matters and the General Manager's Report. And
if
there aren't any updates, I'm not seeing any from the board. Is there a General Manager's Report?
I don't believe we have a report for you this morning.
Okay, great. We will move on to item 13B, 12B, sorry about that, where we're requesting to conduct a public hearing and adoption of the 2025 Storm Drainage Fee Update Report for Flood Zone 9.
Okay, thank you very much. I already introduced myself. Thank you for having me this morning. We do have a presentation, and if we move into the next slide, our request this morning is to receive an overview of the Flood Control and Water Conservation District Flood Zone 9 activities and expenses, to hold a public hearing, and then to adopt the 2025 Ross Valley Flood Protection and Watershed Program Storm Drainage Fee Update Report. And we've underscored that we are not recommending an increase to the storm drainage fee this year. In addition, we've received quite a bit of public comment and questions about Zone 9 funding, finances, revenues, and expenses over the years. And during the staff presentation to your board during the May budget workshops, we made a commitment to come back with additional information. And so this presentation summarizes information that we provided in a fairly extensive staff report. We tried to get into quite a bit of detail to be able to answer the questions that we received about Zone 9 funding. So in addition to the request, we have a presentation with that information on the next slide. So from here, I'm going to spend some time explaining the Flood Zone 9 activities and the revenue sources that come in, so a little bit of background about the zone and the funding that supports the work of the zone. We are going to talk about the storm drainage fee expenses. We'll look at the last 18 years of fee expenses in kind of a high-level summary. Also, we'll take the time to provide some status updates on a couple projects to highlight, and then summarize the Zone 9 financial status and kind of looking forward. And then the last thing I'll say before we jump into the presentation is that I did hear a public comment this morning that advised that this item should have gone to the advisory board first. I'll say that this item is really just a report. It's an update report. We're not making any budgetary or policy recommendations at this time. And given that the advisory board meetings meet quarterly, it's difficult to line up the timing of those meetings. Certainly something that staff could consider if your board wanted us to look into bringing items like this to advisory boards in the future. Okay, on the next slide, I'll talk a little bit about the Zone 9 services and activities, and I tried to put a little chart together here. The services and activities that are provided by the staff that support Zone 9 are really the administration of the advisory board. That's the board meetings and also the administration of the drainage fee measure. In addition to that, the zone staff operate and maintain the flood control infrastructure that exists within the district. And then beyond that, we have what I would call really the project development arm of the flood zone, which is to conduct drainage studies, feasibility reports, and then eventually develop and construct flood control projects. So these are the primary activities of Zone 9. If we move on to the next slide, I'll talk about the revenue sources that support those activities. So this is a really key point. I'm going to say it a few times during the presentation because the funding that comes into Zone 9 and comes into the flood zones is complex. And so I'm trying to break this down. there are really three primary revenue sources that come in. There are property taxes that are collected, I believe, from about 13,000 parcels within Zone 9. The property taxes generate about $400,000 of revenue per year, and they are primarily used for funding the operations and maintenance and administration, not the project expenses, but really just taking care of the infrastructure, operating the pumps, holding these Zone 9 meetings, responding to public inquiries. So that's the property taxes. The estimated cost of the expenses of the Zone 9 administration and operations and maintenance is about $335,000 per year. So the revenues that come in are a little bit more than the expenses related to this work. The second revenue source that comes in is the Ross Valley Storm Drainage Fee. And we're going to spend most of the presentation talking about the Storm Drainage Fee today. It generates about $2.63 million.
Can I just ask one quick question? Chris, the storm drainage, that's what everybody thinks of as the flood fee. I just want to make sure, right? Like, that's what everybody...
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to sort of, for people who haven't checked, that's the flood fee.
Thank you.
No, thanks.
For the clarification. Yeah, for the purposes of this report, we're calling it the storm drainage fee. I'm sure there's many names for it. Flood fee, that's what we're talking about next. Thank you. So the flood fee or the storm drainage fee generates approximately $2.63 million per year. It expires in 2027. It was a 20-year fee measure that was approved by voters back in 2007. The flood fee or the storm drainage fee funds Flood Zone 9 drainage studies and projects. And then lastly, there are grants that come into the zone, and those supplement the project expenses. And so there's been about $10 million of grant funding that's been reimbursed to date for project expenses, and we're anticipating another about $10.9 million in grant funding to support ongoing projects. So on the next slide, we'll transition a little bit to talk a little bit more about the property taxes and the operations and maintenance. And I just have one slide after this really that gets into what that means specifically in Zone 9. So we have the Grant and Park pump station that has utility expenses to operate that. There's an annual pump service, cleaning out the wet well for that pump. We estimate that's about $60,000 per year for that cost. There's channel maintenance, which includes sediment removal, vegetation management, maintaining tide gates to make sure that they operate. And the estimated annual expense for that is about $120,000. The Sunnyside Detention Basin does have vegetation management requirements as well as sediment removal. That's estimated at about $60,000 per year. And then the Flood Zone 9 administration, the advisory board meetings, the staff support costs to do that work, as well as manage and oversee the rest of the zone operations, is about $95,000 per year. So our estimate for the total annual operations and maintenance expenses is about $335,000 per year for the zone. That's funded, again, from the property taxes that come in, which are about $400,000 a year in revenue. So from there, I'm going to shift gears and spend some more time talking about the storm drainage fee or the flood fee. And so if we skip through the next slide, there's a transition into that. And so the history of the storm drainage fee, it was approved by voters in 2007 following some major flooding that occurred in the Ross Valley in 2005-2006. You can see a photograph there. The fee is set to expire in 2027. And as I mentioned before, the fee funds flood control project planning, development, and construction. And so on the next slide, and I'm not going to go through all of the information on this slide. There's quite a bit here, but I do want to talk a little bit of some highlights during the life of the drainage fee program, basically over the last 20 years. And I'll say that, the fee has been in place now for coming up on 20 years, 18 years. We have projects that have been in the making, for several years, coming up on 10 years. I'm trying to summarize this information and pick out salient points to really help explain the funding and the finances, certainly for members of the public who are watching along. It's not possible for us to get all 20 years of history into this one report. So I'm certain that there are things that are not included here. Just wanted to acknowledge that. As I mentioned, in 2005, 2006, there was severe flooding in Ross Valley. And then in 2007, voters approved the storm drainage fee measure. And again, that was a 20-year measure. We don't have a square up on this slide, but the fee measure was actually challenged. And it went all the way to the California Supreme Court, where it was eventually found to be upheld and moved forward. So that's why there's not a lot that happened between 2007 and 2011 on that slide. In 2011, the fee was used to fund a Ross Valley drainage study. And basically, this was an initial study to understand how the drainage worked within the Ross Valley. And that study identified several potential improvements that would need to be explored further to see if they could eventually turn into projects to be constructed for flood risk reduction purposes. In 2012, a work plan was adopted that included a plan to start work on 4 detention basins and 7 bridges as priorities. And then when we initiate projects, the first things that we do are typically, higher-level planning work to go and understand potential costs and schedules and risks, permit requirements. And so that work got started. Grant funding was secured in 2013 and 2014 to take a look at detention basins at Phoenix Lake, Memorial Park, as well as work on Cordondera Creek. And then in 2015, there was a ballot measure that was approved by the voters that stopped the work on the Memorial Park Basin and precluded a detention basin from being constructed there. So that work paused or stopped due to that voter initiative in 2015, and that's when the San Anselmo Flood Risk Reduction Project started up as a replacement project. And I think the point that I'm trying to make in telling this slide is that the history of the flood fee program has been complex. There has been public opposition along the way to the projects. The projects themselves are very complex. We're talking about the drainage of a large watershed area. And so there's quite a bit of history here. There's been quite a bit of twists and turns. But as some things have started, other things have, come to a halt due to public opposition or in some cases infeasibility in the case of Phoenix Lake. So I'll talk a little bit about the fee assessment for this current fiscal year on the next slide. And what you'll see on the map is the flood zone 9, the actual geographic area of flood zone 9, which is the greater Ross Valley. And the coloring in there, the lighter pink color are the single family homes that pay the fee. And then you can see there is some orange and purple and darker pink dotted in there. Those are condos, multifamily, and commercial industrial parcels that pay the fee. The vast majority of the parcels that pay the flood fee are single-family homes. There's about 12,600 of them, and their annual fee range is $132.48 up to about $221.40 per year. If you paid the median amount of that range, say $175 per year for a single-family home, over the 20-year life of the fee program, it amounts to about $3,500 paid by that parcel. The total amount collected, or that we would anticipate collected in 2025-26 for the flood fee, is about $2.625 million. So on the next slide, I'm going to talk higher level about the entire storm drainage fee program, the revenues and expenses really over the 20-year program. We anticipate the total amount of flood fees collected over the life of the 20-year program to be about $48 million. I'll say there's been about $43 million collected to date, and there's about $5 million left to be collected over that program. That brings us to about $48 million. There have been about $10 million worth of grants that have been reimbursed to date as an additional revenue that's come in, and we're anticipating another $10.9 million in new grant revenue that would come in to support ongoing projects. So when you add up all of that revenue, we get about $68.9 million worth of revenue that's come in over the 20-year program, and the expenses are planned to match that revenue coming in. So on the next slide, I want to talk about the expenses to date over the last 18 years. Obviously, we can't get into every dollar spent over that time period, but we put together a chart, and we put this into the staff report as well, and spent quite a bit of time in the staff report trying to explain the different expenditures here. At the very beginning, the watershed planning, the study and the development of the work plan to identify the potential projects that could provide flood risk reduction that occurred back at the beginning of the life of the flood fee, there was about $5 million expended there. After that, when the work plan was approved, the engineering and feasibility studies that went into determining if certain projects would be feasible and looking at detention studies, or detention basin studies, was about $10.6 million. Capital improvement projects that move forward. There's the San Anselmo Flood Risk Reduction Project. That included the construction of the Sunnyside Basin, the removal of the building from the Building Bridge 2 platform, and then the ongoing Building Bridge 2 project, the expenses on that, plus the Corte Madera Flood Risk Reduction Project and the Hillview Pump Station Project totaled about $29.5 million. And then there's been ongoing coordination and creek enhancement work that's occurred since the beginning of the program, about $3.85 million. So the total expenses to date since 2007 is about $49 million, and about $10 million of that from the previous slide was funded by grant revenue that came in. Okay, I'm going to highlight a couple projects. If we flip into the next slide, we can see there's a photograph of the current lower Corte Madera Creek channel and concrete walls. We have a project that was just awarded to a contractor on June 24th that will remove some of those walls and restore a portion of that flood channel. And so I'll talk about the Corte Madera Creek project on the next slide here. One of the complexities of the way that the flood fee projects were put together is the projects were looking at portions of creeks and trying to mitigate flood risk or reduce flood risk along those creeks and watersheds within the Ross Valley. And so the San Anselmo Flood Risk Reduction Project is called a project, but it's really made up of smaller components or elements, and that's Building Bridge 2, Sunnyside Detention Basin. The Corte Madera Creek Project is the same way. It's a flood risk reduction project on the Corte Madera Creek, but it includes several components. And I know that's very confusing. It was confusing for me to try to understand that as I got up to speed on this. I know it is for the public as well. But in short, the Granton Park Pump Station and Creek Access Ramp was completed in 2022 to 24. We do have the Lower Corte Madera Creek Channel Restoration Project that will start in September that was just awarded. That will remove sections of the concrete channel walls and restore natural creek banks for flood risk reduction and wildlife habitat enhancement. And then there's another project that is still in the making. We're anticipating construction to start in 2027, and that's the in-stream improvements, including a fist passage and modifications to other flood walls. Okay, on the next slide, I'm going to give an update on the Building Bridge 2 removal project. You can see in the photograph, for folks that aren't familiar with Building Bridge 2 in San Anselmo, there was a structure that was constructed over San Anselmo Creek, and the foundation of that structure restricts the flow of the creek channel. It restricts the creek channel. And this exacerbates flooding when we have flood events. It basically causes the water to come up and flow out of the creek channel and then flow overland through downtown Anselmo, causing flooding to hundreds of properties. The project proposes to remove the structure, which would eliminate that obstruction from the creek channel. As a result, more of the water during a flood event would be able to stay in the creek channel, and then it reduces the flooding that occurs in the immediate downtown area in San Anselmo. But because more water stays in the creek channel, there is an increase in the base flood elevation for properties that are located along the creek channel. And that's part of what makes this project so challenging, is that while we see a large public benefit, and that's why the district continues to pursue the project, there are properties that are impacted by the removal. And so that's what's made this very, very challenging. The way that we quantify the impacts of the project and the way that we look at the flood hazards and how they relate to the National Flood Insurance Program that FEMA administers is by processing something called a conditional letter of map revision. And I'll call it the CLOMAR because it's easier to say. This is basically the district's application to FEMA that says, here's what we're proposing, and here's all of our modeling, and here's all the science that's gone into what we think will happen when this structure is removed and the potential impacts, and then how we would mitigate for those impacts. And that gets submitted to FEMA, and then FEMA reviews and comments on that CLOMAR. And effectively, FEMA would say, yes, we agree. If the project were approved and built as constructed, we would modify the flood maps accordingly. Or FEMA may have comments and say, we disagree with this, or we think that you may need to do additional mitigations. I mentioned in that a little bit, the CLOMAR does not constitute approval of the project. It's really FEMA commenting on what's being proposed to see if they would accept it if the project was approved going forward. We do anticipate that the CLOMAR will take at least 6 months to review by FEMA, and we're planning on submitting that document to FEMA by the end of this month. Ultimately, FEMA's comments on the CLOMAR are going to determine whether the project can proceed as planned. We have proposed mitigations. We have the modeling that was used to really develop the project and how it's been anticipated that it will occur. And if FEMA comes back and has substantive comments on the CLOMAR, we'll have to reevaluate, what is the right thing to do going forward. So on the next slide, I'm going to talk a little bit about the risks with the Building Bridge 2 project. And as I mentioned, we do need FEMA's review. And when we submit that CLOMAR, we've got at least 6 months probably before we get their comments back. I mentioned that there are properties that are impacted. There are 10 properties downstream that are impacted. 9 of them would require what we call wet flood mitigations. That's things like relocating air conditioning systems that are maybe at grade next to a home and elevating them up above the base flood elevation, that type of mitigation. There is one structure that has a what we'll call structural impact, where there's a piece of the foundation that has a crack that looks like we may want to mitigate that. And that is proposed to do basically a fiberglass wrap on that portion of the foundation to mitigate. So those are the mitigations that are proposed in the CLOMAR. The county would need to enter into agreements with these impacted property owners in order to be able to relocate that air conditioning unit or in order to be able to put that fiberglass on that foundation. And that's a risk. We've got 10 property owners that we would need to engage with to do that work. FEMA may require additional mitigations beyond what we proposed in the CLOMAR. And depending on what those mitigations are, if FEMA comes back and says that that structure needs to be elevated, the entire structure up above the base flood elevation, the cost to do that may exceed the available budget for the project. In terms of approvals, in addition to the plans and specs and award of a construction contract, if the project were to proceed to construction, the project requires a building permit for the demolition of the structure from the town of San Anselmo. And then lastly, I'll state from a funding risk, the grant funding for Building Bridge 2 has been extended several times. It was secured almost 10 years ago. It's been extended several times, and the grant funding agency, California Department of Natural Resources, has indicated that unless the district is able to show progress with FEMA and their review of the CLOMAR by the end of this year, that funding may not be extended again. And there's about $2.7 million there of that grant funding that I would say is at risk as we go forward. So with all of those risks, and I think as I mentioned a few minutes ago, the district is still continuing to move forward with this project because of the public benefits associated with the removal of the building bridge. The number of properties that are removed from the floodplain altogether, I believe there's 20-something, maybe 21 that are completely removed from the floodplain. There's a reduction in flooding in the what we call 10-year storm events or the less severe but more frequent flooding. There's a significant improvement for the removal of the structure. However, as I mentioned, there are impacts with the removal of the structure to the properties immediately downstream, which make this very challenging. But looking forward and talking about the project funding, so this is the flood fee, again, not the property taxes. On the next slide, we are anticipating that the total remaining project costs, as currently contemplated, are about $18.2 million, and that's for proceeding with the Building Bridge 2 removal and the mitigations to the properties downstream as needed, as well as the work that is planned for Corte Madera Creek. So about $18.2 million worth of work left to perform, funded by the flood fee. The storm drainage fee or the flood fee, as well as the grant revenues that we're expecting, we do believe will be adequate to complete the remaining projects as they're currently proposed. If we did see risk come to fruition or the grant funding was not extended by the funding agency, you know, the scenario would change. We may need to look for additional funding. The Zone 9 projected fund balance following the completion of the Building Bridge 2 project, and really after the fee expires, we're expecting that the Zone 9 fund balance would be about $2.9 million. So we can think of that as our contingency for the remainder of this project work that needs to happen. And then, as I said, if we had any significant cost increases or delays or scope changes to the projects between now and the time that they would be implemented, we would need to go look for additional funding, or we would need to consider reducing the scope of those projects in order to stay within the available funding. Talking a little bit about the Flood Zone 9 operations and maintenance, which is really the ongoing efforts on the next slide. And these are the efforts, as I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, are funded by that ongoing property tax revenue that does not expire. I mentioned before the annual property tax revenue is about $400,000 per year. The annual expected operations and maintenance expenses within the zone are about $335,000, and that allows the district to put about $65,000 per year into reserves. And when I say into reserves, that just stays in the Zone 9 fund balance, and that's really there for the replacement of future equipment, unplanned expenses, and other things that come up. So we're projecting that Flood Zone 9 is fiscally solvent into the future in terms of the operations and maintenance of the existing flood control infrastructure. However, that property tax revenue is really only adequate to support the operations and maintenance of the zone. If there were new projects that needed to occur in the future, we would need to have additional funding to come in to support those. And so with that, I'll wrap up the presentation. I'm certain there are comments and questions. I'm happy to do my best to field them. As a reminder, our recommendation today was for your board to receive this overview and report, to conduct a public hearing as has been the district's practice for this annual report, and then to adopt the annual storm drainage fee report with no increase to the fee. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris. We'll look for questions. I'll go to Supervisor Colbert.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. So the first thing I'll say is thank you for this and for the follow-up to the budget hearings. This is an improvement on the initial financials and certainly the clearest I've seen in my many years as a member of the community and someone paying the flood fee and council member. So I very much appreciate that. And I don't want to bury the lead that there is no recommended increase to the fee. So I just want to make sure that we're all clear on that. So thank you very much. I'm just going to quickly go back through some of the slides with you, if you don't mind. So on slide number 5, we could sort of pull that up. Is that possible? Oh, got it. I see. Hold on. And part of these questions are not just for me. They're sort of reflective of the community questions and feedback that I've been getting over the years and in response. So I just want to sort of come back and share. So forgive me, President Sackett, if some of the questions bleeds into commentary also. So I just think it's incredibly helpful that folks can sort of see the difference between property taxes and the flood fee. Because I think very often when we talk about the finances of Flood Zone 9, there's sort of a bleeding between what exactly we're paying for and what those funds look like. So it seems certainly from the perspective of the property taxes, you know, Chris, in your estimation, is that working well, right? $400,000 a year and excess for maintenance. You're comfortable that would, in your mind, that's working as intended?
Yeah, that element of this appears to be working as intended. The amount of revenues coming in exceeds the planned expenses to take care of that flood control infrastructure. You know, it's many special districts are not fiscally solvent. This appears to be. And then when we look back over the last several years at inflation and also at how that property tax has come in, the property tax has basically kept up with inflation. So we're fairly comfortable that just from an operations and maintenance perspective that the property tax that's ongoing is adequate to support that.
All right, great. Thank you. Didn't we get pull up slide number 11 when you get a chance, please? And Chris, I want to thank you for laying this out. And just to reiterate, so a single-family home, and I want to be mindful that not only do I want to be mindful, one, I pay the fee, too, and this is taxpayer money, right? And so we have to be mindful of that. So I appreciate you laying out what the annual cost to a family would be. And then you said about an aggregate, if someone had been living in their home over the last 20 years, an aggregate, it would be about $3,500. Did I capture that figure correctly?
Yeah, I just did some quick math. If you look at the range of the fee for a single-family residence, between $132 and $221. So if you go toward the middle of that, call it $175, and you multiply that by 20 years of paying that $175 per year, you get about $3,500.
All right. So, I mean, every dollar counts, but I think it's important to put that in perspective for, you know, the single family homes, condo, commercial use, because when we now move to slide 13, please, right? I mean, I think that this is the slide that certainly, frankly, causes consternation in the community, right? They see $49 million that's been spent since the institution of the flood fee. And frankly, I mean, it has not been a successful program. And I think people were expecting and anticipated more. And I'm not an engineer. So, Chris, I would appreciate your insight into the following. And I'm asking this really from the question I hear from the community, it's a question of sort of curiosity and trying to understand better. I appreciate this. And on one side, I see watershed planning, engineering feasibility studies. And then on the right-hand side, I see what would be capital improvement projects. And that would be actual projects in the ground. And I'm wondering if you can sort of speak to, it seems that a lot of dollars have been spent towards planning and feasibility studies vis-a-vis relative to the ratio of capital improvement projects. And I'm recognizing you might be sort of reiterating or repeating what you've said before, but I'm wondering, could you sort of address that? Because I think a lot of frustration seems to be a lot of money towards planning and studies, not a lot that actually has been done.
Yeah, thank you, Supervisor. And I think that that's accurate. However, I think to some extent, we should expect that, you know, these types of projects, we're talking about drainage projects that interface with public and private property, that have all kinds of regulatory permits that come along with them. These are complex projects, ultimately, when they move forward to be constructed, much more so than like a paving project that, you know, that the county may do. So there is a lot of planning work that's gone into these and feasibility studies to be able to determine, one, how does the drainage actually work within the watershed, and then what potentially could be done to address the flooding. And then from there, taking a look at those options and trying to do the feasibility study work to say, okay, you know, would a detention basin at location A, B, or C actually work? Could we construct it? What would the cost be in order to design and construct that? So there is a lot of feasibility study work that's gone into all of this in order to get to the point where there's actually a capital project to be developed and then constructed. I think that the complexity of the type of projects, I think the fact that there's been a lot of public opposition to these projects and to some of these detention basins that were evaluated and some components of these projects have made this less than efficient and probably contributed to some of the more expensive planning costs that we saw on the front end. I'll also say that I think there's been missteps and twists and turns within the district and the staff that have worked on these projects, and that really this has not been delivered as efficiently as it probably could have been. But trying to compare these complex projects to, say, more typical county projects that we do, like paving, is really apples and oranges. These are always going to be less efficient, but certainly I think there was, you know, in hindsight, looking backward, room for improvement in the way that these funds were expended.
All right, thank you. Let's move on now to, I'm going to move on to slide 16. We'll skip over the Quarter Madera Creek project update. I think we'll probably come back to that at the end. So I appreciate, Chris, that you focused on flood zone 9 in the entirety, but certainly the building bridge 2 removal is high on everyone's radar right now. And I guess... I'm not going to repeat what you said in terms of, look, this whole process is leading up right now to basically get submitted to FEMA. There'll be a process. But I do have a sort of fairly indirect, simple question that I believe that you and your staff have gotten, that I have gotten. What, Chris, in your mind, is the best way for any member of the public, wherever they are in the flood district, within San Anselmo, Ross, wherever, to communicate with FEMA about the CLOMAR process?
Thank you, Supervisor, for that question. We've looked into this extensively with FEMA, and the CLOMAR review process it doesn't lend itself to the type of public engagement that we see at a lot of our local level here on other projects. So that said, if a member of the public has a concern or a comment or a question about the CLOMAR or the process, I would encourage them to send an email to the flood district. They can email floodinquiry@marincounty.gov. The district will collect those emails. We will then forward them to the town of Ross and the town of San Anselmo and to FEMA for review and consideration. I think in FEMA's process for the CLOMAR review, if you look at it, there's the opportunity for the local comment as really coming from the local floodplain administrators, and that's from the town of Ross and from the town of San Anselmo. That's really where the ability is for the local comment to come in and go into FEMA. And so we would encourage, if folks had questions, comments, or concerns, if they send them in to us or they send them in to their local floodplain administrators, the town of Ross, the town of San Anselmo, anything the county receives, we'll make sure that the town of Ross and San Anselmo have that information, and we will also send that to FEMA for consideration as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Moving on to slide 17. The building bridge to removal project has innumerable risks, which you've sort of laid out very well. So I'm going to go right to slide 18, which is looking forward. So, Chris, what we have now is we have a FEMA process. We have innumerable risks. And I will say, as a member of the San Anselmo community, right, we have on a certain level, somewhat of an untenable situation, which you and I have discussed along with County Executive Johnson. We have the county owning a piece of property that is negatively at this point impacting the community and economic vitality of our downtown. I think it should be clear that our community, and in fact I would argue the Ross Valley and Marin, has suffered a loss by the closure of that. And I want to be clear on the record, I would like to do everything within my power, within the confines of public safety, to see that park reopened. So Chris, my question to you is, what's plan B? What's plan C?
Thanks, Supervisor. That's a great question. I've had this conversation recently with the district staff that we need to start having the conversations about plan B and plan C. The project could move forward and we could hear back from FEMA and there could be, you know, a fatal flaw potentially in the Clomar. If that happens, then what? I don't want to start the conversations about then what, you know, 6 months from now when we hear back from FEMA. I think we need to have the conversations now about what is plan B and what is plan C. If the structure can't be removed or if we have to, you know, modify the way that that would occur. I am certainly open to partnering with the town of San Anselmo on, you know, ways that, that the district can come to the table, that the county can come to the table and partner with them to support the development of Creek Park and other initiatives within the town. And we'd be happy to, you know, participate in those conversations to see what we can do. But I think we need to start that now rather than waiting until we hear from FEMA. We need to have some other options that we're at least considering and thinking about how they could move forward if Building Bridge 2 can't be removed as contemplated.
All right, well, thank you. And I'll just sort of underscore 2 points on that is that you sort of alluded to. One is, I think the question has to be asked, is the county the best place to just move this project forward in general? And should we have conversations and let San Anselmo take this over, right? That's one, just a conversation. And I think the other, which we earlier had during the budget conversations, and County Executive Johnson had the conversation, right? Does the current flood zone structure, like, is that an efficient structure simply to move flood projects forward, right? In terms of efficiency, in terms of efficacy, in terms of community outreach, right? And do we simply just need a brand new structure from the way up? And I know, County Executive, you already had that conversation, and I certainly want to continue that and move forward on that. And in closing, the last question I'll have you ask, Chris, is can you talk about the successes in Flood Zone 9? I tend to think, you know, that the Quartermare Creek Project has, in fact, been a success in so many ways, which is why I skipped over but want to return to slide 15.
Yes, thank you. So, I mean, certainly the work that's been done by the district and the work that's been funded by the flood fee has been challenging and it's taken quite a while. But you're correct. I think if you look at the entire Zone 9 and not just Building Bridge 2 in San Anselmo, that's been particularly challenging. If you look at the work of the zone that's occurred over the years, there's been quite a bit that's been done, and there's quite a bit more that's coming. And I certainly think that the Quartermadera Creek project's been very successful. Like I said, we have a $3 million construction contract that's going to get underway here in September, and then the next phase of that project coming online probably in 2027. In addition to the Grant and Park Pump Station and Hillview Pump Station and drainage improvements that were already constructed. So there's been quite a bit of work that's been done. The Sunnyside Detention Basin, you know, upstream up in Fairfax, were all constructed as a part of the part of the flood fee program as well.
Well, I'll for my questions, I just want to thank you, Chris, you and your team. Thank you, President Sackett.
Other questions, Supervisor Lucan.
Yeah, just one question, one quick comment. Thank you for laying all of this out. There's certainly some contingencies with FEMA that you identified there. Could you just comment on the current status of our interactions with FEMA, their staffing, how confident? I mean, do we have a direct line of communication, kind of what's happening with the office that we're working through on this?
Yeah, thank you for that. Obviously, there have been a lot of changes at the federal administration, and we are continuing to engage with FEMA staff on a regular basis. I know that our flood district staff have met with FEMA representatives several times to ask questions and get guidance on the preparation of the Clomar application. We'll be submitting this, like I said, the application for the Clomar the end of this month is what we're anticipating. FEMA has told us we should expect a six-month review. That's what we've gotten back from them. As kind of getting back to what I was just a conversation I was having with Supervisor Colbert about Plan B and Plan C, that six-month review may take 9 months. It may take 12, right? We don't know exactly what's going to happen. There's lots of changes every day. To me, that's all the more reason to start talking about the other options so that we can hopefully bring some certainty into the community sooner than later than just this waiting period and then go from there.
Great. And then just a super quick comment. I appreciate Supervisor Colbert's comments with regards to number of dollars that go in towards planning, the number of dollars that, you know, go into the ground. You know, I think we see this in all the different boards that we sit on, whether it's a transportation project or any other mega project. You know, there is a larger percentage that goes into planning. That's just sort of the regulatory environment that we're in. But one thing we have done very well here in Marin is using those local dollars for planning to then leverage outside dollars in grants, which has happened with this project, and it's happened with a lot of other large projects. That's something we've done well here in Marin. So I thought it's worth putting it out there. It is hard when you put a bunch of money into planning and you don't leverage any of that. But I think this and many other projects, we have been able to do that. I know it's always hard looking at those percentages, but leverage is also a way that we could really make our dollars go farther. And grants is a part of that. So thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Lucan. Supervisor Moulton-Peters.
The process check. Are we in just questions or comment? I have comments, but I can wait.
If you can wait, that would be great. Okay. That's okay.
But I will agree with what Supervisor Lucan just said, and I think it's important to consider this flood zone in the context of the larger county flood zones and planning that we do in general, because we have lots of familiar situations similar.
On the six-month Clomar review, and then I think I heard you say that the funding may not be renewed again potentially, or we're hearing it may not be. Is that, and you said that was a California state agency who would make that determination, Natural Resources. Is that dependent on hearing back on the Clomar?
So the staff at the grant funding agency that we've been engaged with have indicated to us that in order to process another extension of the grant, they would want to see, I think the word was, you know, significant progress on FEMA's review of the Clomar, and so that's very hard to define what that means. To us, what that means is that we're trying to finalize the Clomar application and have it complete and submit it to FEMA as soon as possible, you know, ideally within the next week or two, to get that out of this office into their hands for review so that we can get their comments back hopefully as soon as possible to be able to demonstrate to our funding partners that, you know, we are still proceeding to move forward. It's not something that we have a lot of concrete information about. It's really been something that they've indicated to us that, you know, unless you can show good forward progress, it's not likely to be extended again.
I mean, I think that's when we start thinking about Plan B on today, too. I guess if they say 6 months, I'm concerned. And so I feel like even what you've presented today and start that advocacy that we are moving forward today and not sort of waiting till early December to say we don't have a response on the Clomar. I think there's ways we can go about that. And then my other question is, what noticing did we do about today's meeting? Was it only on today's Board of Supervisors agenda, or did any notice go out to the flood zone in particular regarding this item being on the agenda? I assume we have an interested parties list on the flood zone.
We do, and that's a great question, President Sackett. Thank you. This item, as I'm aware, was noticed the same way that we would notice other items. I don't believe that there was a special notification that went out to the interested parties list. The district did send notifications out about the pending CLOMAR application to properties that would be impacted, but I don't believe that that specifically referenced this meeting or this update.
So if there's no further questions, we will move. We will now open the public hearing on this item, and we will take public comment. Is there anybody wishing to make public comment on this item? I'm not seeing anyone in the chambers, and I am not seeing any hands raised on Zoom. So we will close public comment, and we'll bring it back to the board now for comments. I'll look to Supervisor Moulton Peters.
Thank you. You know, I want to offer some observations. I'm going to call this Tales of Two Cities, but it's really Tales of Two Watersheds. And Supervisor Colbert, I'm offering this in particular to you, but also to our staff, because Mill Valley has had a very similar situation. You know, every time the Ross Valley floods, Mill Valley floods in the major storms. We have our own Corte Madera del Presidio Creek that runs parallel Miller Avenue that is the drainage for the southern flank of Mount Tam. And so in 1982 and every year in the 30s, every year the Ross Valley floods, Mill Valley floods. We didn't have a flood zone for a long time, or we weren't able to obtain funding from the flood zone to pay for it. So. To do anything. So the City Council undertook a watershed and drainage study similar to what you've done here. And in the end, the City Council commissioned that study with Schaff and Wheeler, and the costs of taking action were something the city could not contemplate covering. We're engaging with the flood zone now. Our flood zone 3 has actually 4 separate watersheds that are covered by flood zone 3, so and you may have more as well. But in the end, where we landed was we were not going to fund improvements to prevent flooding in the Sycamore neighborhood. We were just going to ask homeowners to raise their homes as they turned over and redeveloped. We just could not offer that kind of protection with the funding the city had. So I don't know if that's an option for the 10 property owners affected in the Ross Valley, but I do want to say that when it came down to it, we had a tough decision to make, and with the money we had available, we just had to make it. Our flood fees cover our maintenance and operations, and that's it right now. Capital projects are done through grant funding largely. And then we focus on, you know, prevention during the storm season, which I think will be important to the Ross Valley to do, make sandbagging and information to business owners available. But I just want to offer that that's our situation down south, and it's a tough reality. But I do think you've done a lot of good over the years in the planning work you've done, and I hope that you can obtain more grants to do more work and somehow work it out with people, the 10 property owners impacted by the work you have ahead of you. So, thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Colbert.
No, I just want to thank my colleagues for allowing my questions to bleed into comments, and I want to thank the three of you for your helpful commentary. And I'll close, again, Chris, for thanking you and your team for the presentation and the work you bring to this project.
Thank you very much. And just lastly, I was reminded by our deputy chief county counsel, this item was published as a public hearing, so it was actually run twice in the Marin Independent Journal, run notice of the public hearing as well.
Thank you. I just want to, my comments are thank you for the staff report and this presentation. It really is the clearest that I've seen and allowed me to understand the history of this project that I've, you know, frankly been looking for. So I really do appreciate the staff report detail in clear, plain language, and I understood what was happening and why the we never know when the public is going to engage, but there's been so much engagement from this flood zone that I think this is, let's now share that with the flood zone. And it doesn't mean they're going to love everything that they see, but I do think one of the concerns of the community is a lack of understanding of what has happened and why, and this really does lay a really solid foundation. And to follow that up, I would love to see when any future items come to our board as a flood zone board to make decisions in regard to the flood zone 9, to sort of put it back into this presentation and tell us where it is on that continuum. Because I feel like we have sort of been given sort of a piecemeal, and it's hard to understand how it fits in the entire project. And so, you don't have to go through the whole thing again, but of having that foundation of this is why and this is where it's intersecting here, I think could be really helpful to just building up that public understanding, which I think helps build trust throughout the community. If there are no other questions or comments, we will call for a motion to adopt the 2025 Flood Control Zone 9 Storm Drainage Fee Update Report.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion by Colbert, a second by Lucan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes. Thank you very much, Chris, Judd, Hannah, and all your team. Appreciate it. We will now move on to agenda item 13. We